My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 19 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back on the culture of groupthink, challenge the narrative. Hope everyone is having a great week. And I just want to say as well, thank you for being patient. Because it's been a few weeks since I've posted an episode. And, you know, I've had a few things going on in my life that required some adjustment and realignment. But now we're back on track to having weekly episodes. And we're actually going to change up the format just a tad. I'm going to try to tackle the week's events and hot topics in the news. Rather than just doing a single subject per episode, we'll cover a multiple thing. And then kind of try to tie it all together in a single theme. But, we're still all about challenging the narrative and seeking the truth beneath the rhetoric. And as always, I'm very appreciative of the continued love and support. So thank you again for that. Okay, so let's get into it. The great conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh passed away on Wednesday. The guy was just a huge force in conservative media and paved the way for pretty much everyone that is currently doing any kind of opinion-driven media or talk radio. I mean, it's difficult to put into words just how much of an impact he's had on so many people. He leaves behind an incredible legacy. So rest in peace, Rush. And I pray for peace and comfort for his family and friends, that God may wrap his arms around them in their time of grieving. And also we need to pray for the empty souls on the left, who are using his death as an opportunity to demonstrate just how depraved they really are. But we knew it was going to be like this, right? When Rush was diagnosed with lung cancer, I mean, the vitriol was awful. They actually cheered his diagnosis when it happened, said they couldn't wait for him to die. And when President Trump awarded him the Medal of Freedom, it was awful. They mocked his suffering. And again, couldn't wait for him to die. And they said it out loud. And now that he's passed away, you know, we see outright celebrations. And good riddance and rotten hell were both trending on Twitter, as well as a handful of other horrible hashtags. And I've had some people try to tell me, well, it's both sides, to try to excuse this. And, you know, I'm just so sick of hearing that. It is not both sides. Conservatives and libertarians do not consider dancing on the graves of our political opponents to be a virtue. And if we see you doing it, we will call you out for it. When RGB died, you'd be hard-pressed to find any prominent conservative or media outlet throwing dirt on her name and setting off fireworks in celebration. You know, the left had to latch on to conversations about filling her seat to be offended about, attempting to say that talking about replacing her so soon was disrespectful. But there were no burn in hell or rotten hell hashtags trending on Twitter. There were no media outlets running headlines denigrating her. Now, you might have been able to find some random Twitter accounts that were being jerks. There's always jerks out there. But the general attitude was one of respect. Here, however, we have all kinds of blue checks saying just awful stuff about Limbaugh. And I'm not going to regurgitate it here. You can go to Twitter or Facebook and read the replies to any of the news articles. I encourage you not to do that, though, because that kind of emptiness and lack of humanity deserves less attention, not more. But I got to tell you, I have never been more convinced than I am right now that this progressivism or wokeism or leftism or whatever you want to call it is truly an extremist religion. It truly is. It's a religion of vengeance without any form of grace whatsoever, without any redemption. There is only a strict demand for righteous purity and an endless search for and punishment of heretics. If you don't believe what they believe, and if you violate their taboo, if you commit blasphemy in their eyes, then you're the worst of the worst sinners, and they want you dead. And when you are dead, they'll celebrate and dance on your grave. Frank Fleming, a writer for the Babylon Bee, he asked a good question. He said, quote, "I always wondered if there are those on the left disturbed by how many of their side celebrate the death of people with different political beliefs. I never see them speak up. You can't lecture the right about extremism if you're too timid to clean up the garbage on your own lawn." End quote. And he's right. And it's a good point. Does such clearly abhorrent behavior bother anyone else on the left at all? Or do they agree with it? Gina Carano was fired from The Mandalorian for pointing out that, hey guys, there's this very real historical danger in being conditioned to hate your neighbors. And then here they are, not just hating their neighbors for their political beliefs, but celebrating and mocking their deaths. Just outrageously awful. And where does it end? If you truly believe your political opponents are evil incarnate, people who deserve to die, where does that end? Gina was absolutely correct. The party that heralds itself as the party of love and tolerance certainly has a funny way of showing it. What they seem to mean is that they're the party of love and tolerance as long as you agree with them and accept their dogma as your Lord and Savior. Otherwise, they'll destroy you and relish in your suffering. Disney fired Gina for being a conservative. You know, they tried to say that it was because she did something anti-Semitic, but you know, that's such an obvious lie, it's almost not even worth discussing. But just really quickly, if you happen to not be familiar with what happened to Gina, she was playing a character named Cara Dune on the Star Wars show The Mandalorian, and she was a huge hit on the show. She had a big fan following, so much so that they were even looking at doing a spinoff with her character as the focus. But the woke Inquisition came for her once they found out that she was a heretic. And they apparently tried to get her fired when she refused to put her pronouns in her bio. And this was a while ago. And instead of putting her pronouns in her bio, she actually put beep, bop, boop, which I thought was brilliant. And clearly the gender Nazis were not amused. So they've been gunning for her for a while. Well, Gina would eventually post a picture on Instagram that showed a Jewish woman being harassed and attacked. And the text was essentially that the Holocaust was able to happen because people became conditioned to hate their own neighbors. And she asked how that was different from hating someone for their political beliefs. Now, how you get anti-Semitism out of that is beyond me. Like I said, it was an obvious lie by Disney and Lucasfilms because the outrage mob came after her and demanded that she be fired. And she was. So they fired her because of the outrage mob and because she was a conservative. This is the kind of world that we're living in now. You're not allowed to dissent, not allowed to have an opinion or thought that deviates from the accepted narrative. And if you do, they'll try to destroy you. Thankfully, as of now, Gina's career is surviving the onslaught, and they weren't able to cancel her completely. She was able to land a movie deal with Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire, which has started their own production company and seems to be doing really well after the debut with their first film, Run, Hide, Fight. So hats off to Ben and Jeremy over there at Daily Wire for giving Gina another platform. And honestly, just doing exactly what I think is needed right now, which is fighting back at the cultural level. You know, Gina had a quote that she said, you know, they can't cancel us if we don't let them. And I love that. Fighting back at the cultural level. People ask me pretty often if I'm going to run for office. And I don't know. I honestly don't know if that's the best course of action. I really appreciate that people think that highly of me to ask me to do that. I mean, that's humbling. But I've been pondering this question for a while, and I think that culture is really where the battle needs to be fought. And government is so corrupt and difficult to change, especially as a new congressman who isn't entrenched in the political games that they play in Washington. But beyond that, politics actually ends up running downstream of culture. So if there is to be a paradigm shift in our society towards the ideals of liberty and away from those of socialism and postmodernism, those changes need to be made at the cultural level. And that's a tall order, I know, but I think that's where we can be the most effective rather than in politics. At least that's true for me. Eventually, we need to figure out a way to stop being so reliant on government anyways, just in general. And you guys know me, I'm a maximum liberty, minimum government type of person. And you know, lately, I've been finding myself more and more frustrated with how people view the role of government in society. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just we're so used to it, where we become dependent on it and can't really imagine what it would be like without it. But it's just maddening. And the whole thing with Ted Cruz going to Cancun, it really highlights this. Because just think about what it means for you to get all torn up about a senator going on vacation during winter storm blackout issues. It means that you have connected the job of a U.S. senator, or what you perceive to be the job of a U.S. senator, with power issues in your state. You are implicitly making the case that the federal government should be involved and have some kind of significant control, which should be insane. It should be. But that probably sounds perfectly reasonable to some people, and that's what makes me want to scream. I have a hard time getting people to understand that most of the problems that they complain about are due to government intervention. Government claims it will solve all these problems, but it leaves out the important detail that the problems were caused by government in the first place. Now, it is what it is at the state level for Texas right now. Like I said, we've allowed ourselves to become far too dependent on government. But to continually advance that dependency to the federal level and just continue to expand government power and control, and the idea of what the government's role is in society, it's suicide. We have to stop it. Who cares what a U.S. senator is doing? His job has literally nothing to do with what's going on at all. Now, some people say, well, it's bad optics, which, you know, to me is a ridiculous argument because it's basically acknowledging that it isn't actually bad. It just looks bad, which means people are making unfair, erroneous judgments about it. And I realize that's how politics works, but it's still stupid. We should be smarter than that. Unless we're all just a bunch of emotional sheep who are unable to critically analyze a given situation and can only react to optics. The unfortunate thing is that may be true for many Americans, and I hate it. For the love of all that is holy, please learn how to think for yourself and refuse to follow the lemmings off of the cliff. Be smarter than that. Our perspectives should be driven by facts and evidence, not optics. Sheesh. Bridget Fetisi had a bit of a fit on Twitter about people defending Ted Cruz for his trip. And her point was that everyone who was defending Cruz also criticized people like Newsom and Pelosi. Now, this take is just outrageously awful for Bridget, and she's normally pretty on point, but this one, way off base. Hey, we can't agree all the time, right? And we shouldn't agree all the time. Otherwise, we're not thinking. But in this particular scenario, she's missing the key point of why people were criticizing these Democrats. It wasn't Newsom going to French Laundry that people were mad about, and it wasn't Pelosi going to the hair salon. The reason they were called out is simple: hypocrisy. They were called out for being blatant, raging hypocrites. That's why. These people were telling others that they weren't allowed to go out or gather in groups or go live their lives. And yet these Democrats considered themselves to be too special to follow the rules, and they did whatever they wanted to do. That's why people were upset with them. That's why people continue to be upset with them, because of the hypocrisy. And the hypocrisy of the Democratic Party is seemingly never ending. Everything they say, they do the opposite. It never fails. Anti-racists are actually racist. Feminists are actually sexist. Antifa engages in political violence to suppress opposing views. Like fascist. It's like a rallying cry for the woke. They're quite literally the party of hypocrites. Now, can you explain what Cruz did that was hypocritical? I mean, perhaps if he was also demanding that people should not be able to travel or go on vacation, and then we find out that he did, then maybe you would have a point. But that isn't the case. The criticism of Cruz is nonsensical. He didn't do anything hypocritical. And to expect him to somehow fix Texas's problems, it's just a complete misunderstanding of the role of government and the role of a U.S. senator. It makes no sense. So, like I said, I'm so tired of the it's both sides takes. And I understand wanting to appear even-handed and criticize both sides. And to a certain extent, we should. You know, both sides do deserve criticism. But trying to make them equal and fail to recognize just how awful the radical left is foolish. And not just that, but the fact that the radical element of the left is quickly becoming just the left. It's taking over completely. And I mentioned this before, but people who used to be considered to be left-leaning are now considered to be part of the right, or in many cases, the alt-right, whatever that means. People like Tim Pool and Dave Rubin, for instance. That's how far left the left has gone. And it's not good. Tom Woods posted an infographic from a school the other day that was explaining to teachers that white supremacy shows up in the math classroom when students are required to show their work. That's not a joke. Showing your work in math class is apparently indicative of a culture of white supremacy. Are you kidding me? It just baffles me that parents aren't pushing back on this stuff. It's quite literally making the argument that black and brown children can't do the things that white children can. How is that not racist? It is clearly the bigotry of low expectations. And I made the same point when Rutgers English department was talking about reworking their grammar rules to be more inclusive for minorities. This was last year. And it's extremely condescending. And I find it just mind-boggling that any racial minority would ever embrace this stuff. I mean, they're telling you that you and your kids are stupid. I don't know any other way to read it. They're telling you that you're stupid to your face. While they dress it up as progress and diversity and inclusivity, they're telling you straight up that you can't do it because you're black or you're Hispanic or whatever. And that there need to be special rules made so that you can be just as good as the white kids. There need to be special rules so that you can figure out how to use the internet or get in line at Walgreens to get a vaccine. Like Biden was saying at his town hall. It's incredible. This anti-racism movement has produced some of the most overtly racist nonsense that I've ever seen in my life. And people are running with it, thinking it makes them a good person. Unbelievably twisted. I made the point on Twitter that there is great irony in the fact that I'm going to have to teach my children that the poison of anti-racism is a far greater threat to their lives than racism ever will be. And it's true. Another awful example, Christopher Rufo posted the other day an infographic that was sent out to white parents from the principal at Eastside Community School in New York. It was called A Tool for Action, and it displayed 8 white identities, ranging from white supremacist, which was the worst, to white abolitionist, which was the best, with the point being to explain what white parents must do to work to defeat their own whiteness. To defeat their own whiteness. The identities were listed as white supremacist, white voyeurism, white privilege, white benefit, white confessional, white critical, white traitor, and white abolitionist, which the abolitionist supposedly seeks to change institutions, dismantle whiteness, and refuse to allow whiteness to reassert itself. My goodness. It's like these people just keep trying to out-awful each other. Every time I come across a new one of these, it's worse than the last one. I mean, clearly, this is insane. To any rational thinking person, this is obviously the epitome of evil. All you have to do is substitute literally any other race or ethnicity for white, and you see how diabolical it would be. I mean, imagine they posted an infographic on the 8 Jewish identities and advocated for Jewish abolition. It would be obvious how evil that is. These people are insane. And I don't say that in a hyperbolic, cliche kind of way. I really, honestly believe they are mentally unstable. There is something psychologically wrong with them. I've speculated before about the possibility of a collective mental illness, not unlike a mass hysteria, that presents with symptoms similar to what we would call paranoid personality disorder in an individual. Here is some of the symptoms of PPD. Now, you tell me if you notice any similarities. Doubting the commitment, loyalty, or trustworthiness of others. Believing others are using or deceiving them. Are unforgiving and hold grudges. Are hypersensitive and take criticism poorly. Read hidden messages in the innocent remarks or casual looks of others. Perceive attacks on their character that are not apparent to others. Generally react with anger and are quick to retaliate. Cannot see their own role in problems or conflicts and believe they are always right. Have difficulty relaxing. Are hostile, stubborn, and argumentative. Any of that sound familiar? Add in religious zealotry and a thirst for rooting out and punishing heretics, and this is an exact description of wokeism. Gad Saad called it the parasitic mind and describes how these ideas spread like a virus and kill common sense. And either way, we're dealing with mental illness, irrational thought processes, and a distinct disconnect from reality. And the worst part of all of it is that these people are in positions of power and are spreading the virus to children. Not good. There was a paper published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology titled Signaling Virtuous Victimhood as Indicators of Dark Triad Personalities. And honestly, I'm surprised this was ever even published, but let me just read some of the summary to you. It says, quote, "We investigate the consequences and predictors of emitting signals of victimhood and virtue. In our first 3 studies, we show that the virtuous victim signal can facilitate non-reciprocal resource transfer from others to the signaler. Next, we develop and validate a victim signaling scale that we combine with an established measure of virtue signaling to operationalize the virtuous victim construct. We show that individuals with dark triad traits, Machiavellianism, narcissism, psychopathy, more frequently signal virtuous victimhood, controlling for demographic and socioeconomic variables that are commonly associated with victimization in Western societies. In study 5, we show that a specific dimension of Machiavellianism, amoral manipulation, and a form of narcissism that reflects a person's belief in their superior prosociality predict more frequent virtuous victim signaling. Studies 3, 4, and 6 test our hypothesis that the frequency of emitting virtuous victim signal predicts a person's willingness to engage in and endorse ethically questionable behaviors, such as lying to earn a bonus, intention to purchase counterfeit products, and moral judgments of counterfeiters, and making exaggerated claims about being harmed in an organizational context. End quote. Machiavellianism, narcissism, psychopathy. Ooh boy, so it's not just me. It's not just me. I've also made the point before that the radical left are all about manipulation. They have no actual principles. They only say what they feel they need to say in the moment to try to manipulate others. They are 100% Machiavellian. Mental illness is at the root of wokeism and at the foundation of critical race theory. These people are, quite literally, insane. And speaking of insane, Joe Biden is back to his usual shenanigans. He did a town hall the other night that was full of a bunch of straight-up nonsense. One of the things that really stuck out was his response to the situation with the Uyghurs in China, which, as you know, are being held in concentration camps and having just unbelievably horrific things done to them. And just to give you an idea, there was footage of Uyghur children who had been taken from their parents being fed Chinese propaganda, being forced to recite, "My mother is China, we love our mother, we love China." Literally being brainwashed and indoctrinated. It's just unbelievable. And BBC ran an article about what's been going on, saying that the women in the camps have been systematically raped, sexually abused, tortured. They're working to break them psychologically. I mean, it's unbelievable what's happening. And that it's happening in 2021. All our talk about the Holocaust and slavery, and here we are. We have real-life concentration camps being operated right now as we speak, and we just shrug our shoulders. It's incredible. And so Biden, at the town hall, he was asked about all this, about the situation with the Uyghurs and with President Xi, and Biden said essentially that because he's the president of the United States, that he has a duty to call it out, even though he hasn't, but that there are different cultural norms. Different cultural norms. Now, he's technically correct about that. There are different cultural norms, and not all cultures are created equal. Some are terrible and destructive and need to go away. I've made that point many times about hood culture. But that isn't the point that Biden was making. He was making an excuse for Xi in China. What's happening with the Uyghurs should be forcefully condemned in the strongest possible terms. And while I don't advocate for being the world's police, there should be significant consequences in regards to our dealings with China. But Biden plays footsie instead, waves it off. Differences in cultural norms. You know, I found that progressives have a really bad habit of romanticizing non-white cultures and then promoting moral relativism to excuse evil. But it all plays into what I was saying earlier. They don't actually believe in anything they say. They hold no actual principles. They only do or say what they think will be effective in terms of emotional manipulation. The situation with the Uyghurs fits into everything the radical left screams incessantly about. Racism, oppression, concentration camps, sexual assault, slavery. I mean, my goodness, what else do you need? And yet they don't care. NBA organizations still embrace China. Disney still embraces China. Nike still embraces China. How is this possible? Manipulation. Machiavellians. They don't believe in any of it. They only want you to bow to their gods when they tell you to bow. That's it. We need to get braver as conservatives and as libertarians. Anybody that's against the woke ideology needs to be braver and needs to stand up against it. This wokeism in America needs to be fought head on. It is a concern about whether we can actually turn it around at this point, or as James Lindsay put it, if we just need to throw sand in the gears. But regardless, we can't sit idle. We need to fight. The mob will come for us. That's inevitable. But we need to do a better job at supporting each other when that happens. People need to feel free to stand up and say exactly what they believe. We need to go to school board meetings and excoriate the people trying to implement these toxic agendas. We need to stand up to our corporate bosses and tell them we refuse to participate in racial discrimination and threaten to sue them if they try to make us or if they retaliate. We need to be far more deliberate, strategic, aggressive, expansive, and unapologetic, because that's exactly how the woke are approaching it. We need to be more organized and purposeful, and we need to push back. Hard. Enough is enough. Thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent.
If you would like to help support the show through donation, you can do so at donorbox.org/Leonidas. DONORBOX.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, share with your friends. Also, follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at leonidasjohnson.com. And always remember, do your own research, challenge everything. Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next week. God bless.